Welcome to Shifting Power Through Feminisms, a podcast series born from the African Feminisms Gathering held in Johannesburg in September 2025. Over 4 days, feminists from across the continent and across generations came together through ritual, art, activism, and dialogue to reimagine power, challenge injustice, and build futures grounded in care, creativity, and collective strength. This podcast doesn't recount the gathering. It continues its conversations. In the 3 episodes, we explore how African feminists are responding to a time of polycrisis, how well-being and healing shape sustainable movements, and how men can engage meaningfully as allies in feminist struggles. These episodes carry forward the spirit of the gathering's core themes: rights, representation, and resources, while inviting listeners into the ongoing work of shifting power through feminisms. So let's keep the conversation moving.
So this is a podcast around ritual and community with The Nest and myself, Tia Magic, Mahala Tuto. And we're talking about community and ritual and participatory practice that we are all about. It's an extension of the AfriFeminism Gathering by Gute that was held, I think, 25 to 28 September 2025, which spoke to economies of care, intergenerational solidarity, resistance, and transformative strategies, and I think our strategies are more around inner pursuits. And yeah, I think the first question, or the first thing rather, would be to introduce ourselves and our dream work and, yeah, who we are as beautiful souls.
It's so nice to be able to connect with you guys from Cape Town. I think that's one of the joys of technology. We've learned through COVID that we don't have to be in the same space in order to connect really deeply. So I'm just grateful for that. Yeah, my name is Anesu Tapiwa Mbijo.
That's the full name.
I need to just speak it into the room. I'm feeling inspired, okay? So, wow, introductions. I think it's quite apt to be having an oral conversation when we're talking about ritual and gathering, because that's the way we pass on information as Africans, right? So as I add myself to this space, I think it's important to say that I was born in Zimbabwe. My dad's Zimbabwe and my mom's South African. And I think that even just having those two lineages nationality-wise informs a lot of my practices as an African woman. I consider myself to be a teacher first and foremost, healer, yes, but I find that perhaps I help to teach other people to heal themselves, which is maybe why the description of teacher feels a bit more apt than the description of healer. My work began in medicine, Western medicine. So I'm a medical doctor, but I found that Western medicine was not really speaking to my soul and my dreams for my life at all, really. I did that for a couple of years, accumulated some trauma myself and the things that I was seeing and in that environment. And then started to think about what healing really meant for me, or what a healing space and healing environment really felt like for me. And it wasn't within the walls of a hospital, within like the clinical setting of like, oh, all of this disinfectant, blue light, beeping machines, people wearing uniform. Like, if anything, that felt anti-healing and anti-comfort and anti-community. So long story short, I started to dream about a space where people could gather and come into community as themselves without needing to look a certain way, speak a certain way, or even have certain beliefs, and that they could feel welcome and at home. And that's really what the seed of the dream of The Nest space was. I grew up as an only child, and so I was very used to being independent when it came to forging my own path and my dreams. But as this community came to being, it became very apparent to me that I needed support and I wanted support. I wanted to build something with somebody else. And that's where this magical little being called Vanessa came in. And for the past 8 years, we have co-held, co-created, co-struggled through our journey.
Bliss, actually.
What? Yeah, it is. Don't lie.
What did you say? It sounds like a marriage.
Bliss.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I like where you're going, though.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, we've done that together. So I think that would be a very broad introduction into me and into the Nest space and where that's fitted into my life.
I guess from my side, my background is in music promotion and events. So I'm a liker of things, a girl of the streets, a strat matey.
Aquarius.
You said we're everywhere. You said we're everywhere as Aquarius. So that's my background. And so I'm from Lesotho originally. I grew up in Canada and England because my parents were academics. So I might not have a mixed racial or genetic lineage, but definitely cultural, and like I was informed by my cultural surroundings. And I suffered when I was younger from depression and anxiety. And that's kind of led my journey into holistic health and wellness. And when I got to UCT, that seemed like the perfect fertile ground to kind of find out how to heal myself. I think I intuitively knew that I wanted to heal myself. And went into yoga, went into meditation, moved to Joburg, which was proven to be, I was very scared because I felt like I was going to lose all of that. Because in Cape Town, it's almost cliche to be a yogi and
it's
to have all of that.
The flow,
exactly, it's know? Everywhere. Yeah. Whereas in Joburg, I just didn't see it anywhere. Mm. And that's why our friends who I never met Anessa at UCT, though we were at UCT together, we had mutual friends. And it was our friends that had to be like, hey, you guys need to meet. And we were both like, dude, like, okay, we both do yoga, I get it. But like, damn, you know. We met, and like they say, the rest is history. I think it became very clear, a 30-minute coffee to, I was in my head, I went to that meeting to help because my background is also brand strategy and marketing and all of that. So I heard she had started a studio and she needed a bit of help in getting it going. And I was like, well, I hope she has a budget for me, you know. And we got there and I ended up walking away with a business partner. And
wow.
I don't even put her in the category of best friend. Like she feels like family.
Mm.
So she's more like an annoying sister.
I'm the older sister, by the way. Even though I'm younger, I'll take the older sister archetype for sure.
In some things, because she went such a classic route of, you know, the older, get graduate, become a doctor, make money. She owns property. She had a car, you know. And I'm like, oh well, let's go party. but experientially, I think I've experienced a lot more of life. Because of my years.
Yeah.
I agree.
And you, Dudu, what's your background?
Dear magic, dressing the spirit.
Mm.
My journey also actually is quite multifaceted because like the good doctor here, I started with your politics, your international relations.
Same.
And your journalism, you know. I thought I'd be a great Toni Morrison one day.
Hey,
maybe they still have you.
Definitely still time.
You know. But then, you know, as you are moving in the world, you know, you start journeying differently. Like you, there weren't people like us in Soweto at the time.
Mm.
So we kind of kept to ourselves, kept indoors, and just kept... You know, so I think the idea of world creation, even beyond the self, I needed to create a world for myself. Because I was now moving into an artistic space, it just became like in a mix of spirit as well.
Mm.
You know, the spiritual led me to the creative.
And the creative is the beadwork?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it was... It, like invigorated by the spiritual because I was on a spiritual path at the time.
What kind of path?
Did you have a calling?
Yes, I did. So I was in initiation at the time. But then when I was there, the remembrance was so great that I remembered myself beating when I was young.
Wow.
You know, and I didn't know that through this tactile thing was invoking such a deep memory, you know.
Oh.
So I left everything. I literally took a hiatus maybe for like 4 years while beating every day.
Like, wow. Incredible.
You know, and just immersing myself. And Dear Magic was a result of me having studied fashion after. Because I was trying to find the art avenue, but I grew up with a grandmother who made clothes, who was, you know, the neighborhood seamstress, you know, and she made such amazing things. So even while in memory, that came back. And I was like, okay, I'm going. I'm going through this. So the meditative aspect came a bit later. I mean, it was almost like one day I went to see Helen Sibidi, and then...
Helen Sibidi?
My mayor, Helen Sibidi, the artist.
Oh.
I went to see her at UJ. That day was, like, I took a long walk because I also do walking meditation. Mm. I believe a lot in our legs.
Yeah.
In our legs. And obviously, I know you guys, breath work can attest to, you know, just 100%. That movement is quite vital. So it was walking, it was beating, it was meditation, it was art. And then I started workshops, you know. I think one friend even invited me to a workshop to host with her, Atambile Masola. And I think that was just the beginning of the blast off, because after that, pending your dreams, your intuition, and then somebody comes in and says, hey, let's do this. You know, that was the communal aspect that says, I feel like you have a dream, you know. So after that, I just never went back. And now there's been these communities of people who reach out to me in my solitude to say, can you come through? And for me, that was such a great confirmation, because in the way we're taught, you know, go to school, be a doctor, or be this, or do this. And I mean, I'm still learning it, because living in the periphery, like I was saying, or unlearning, takes quite a bit. Especially like you're saying, I'm in Joburg, I grew up in Joburg, not seeing or hearing people like me.
Yeah.
And when you're from Cape Town, I'm like, oh, thank God, finally you're here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's always for me also been a virtual community. But I thought I was dreaming of a bead circle one day and just decided to go with it. So we've had kids. We've had from ages of 2 to, I don't know.
Making beads and just
And just chilling and just so talking. So therapeutic. And the kids are always so much better than us, which I always find, oh my God, how are you this amazing?
In what sense? The work they produce
or
the process? The work
and just everything for them. I think maybe it's the childlike spirit that we need. There's so much wisdom in it.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to just be. Yeah. So that's how Dear Magic came into being. So it's now like more of an atelier. And now I have a Mahala Tuto, like free education arm to it. That's the arm that facilitates the workshops, that because the Dear Magic is still me in my solitude, in my remembrance. And then, because I had to take everybody out. You know, I thought of it this morning, community. And then I thought commune. You have to be able to commune with yourself first, I feel, before you engage with a community, I feel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I resonate with that so much. I mean, Vanessa, I think you've almost had a formalized practice of solitude with your Vipassana for a very long time. And I've always felt throughout my life that I'm, you know, I would say I'm quite extroverted. I enjoy being around people. But if I, for me to recharge and for me to come up with ideas, or for me to feel like I have the space to hold space for other people, I have to first have that time with myself. And I think you're totally right. There's almost this, it's a bit of a tension in a way, but not a negative one, but a tension between holding that container for the self and knowing when to step out, how long to step out for, how much energy to give before coming back into that container, which takes a lot of practice. And you can also tell when you get that imbalance incorrect, where you're too much in solitude and you start to become almost, you know, in a hermit mode, and you stop learning from other people and your world actually gets smaller versus being the opposite, where your world is just too big that you aren't, you're overstimulated and you're not able to actually process what it is that you're experiencing.
I think that also it's interesting when you guys speak of that tension, because, you know, what's been the hot topic on in media right now, which resonates so much with me, is the statement, and I'm not sure who the original author is, but it's now widely used, is that the cost of community is inconvenience. And there's nothing that just hits truer. And I think of that when I am dragging myself to yet another moon ceremony, or having to go open up, or trying to figure out how we're going to pay the teachers, or responding to a WhatsApp from a student. And it's like, but that inconvenience, that, you know, that feeling of leave me alone, leave me alone, I just want to be by myself. The reward when the community shows up for you is, I think, the essence of African culture. We thrive and only know how to operate in community.
I mean, I think that's why they have a time, or, you know, when I was growing up, Mutu would say, ah, kilo imamela, you know. So it means I'm going to listen to myself. Oh, where's uncle so-and-so? No, he's listening to himself there by the tree, you know. So it, for me, this practice, what, like, even the word meditation for me, I found that, okay, Eastern reference and all of those things, which is good, but I needed to, you know, bring it back.
100%.
Like, bring it back. And, I mean, once you go into that safety of a memory, you remember somebody say, or, you know, or they're blasting music for hours and hours, and suddenly the music is quiet. And then you know that there's a transition happening. You know?
So interesting that you say that, because I think that's our whole pursuit, right? It's no one's going to do it for us. We're going to keep having these phrases and these practices and all of these things being taught and sold back to us in a language and phrasing that seems foreign. But when you engage, you're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I've known this.
I've known this, you know, and it's so important, I think, for us, especially of this generation, to define and to point and be like, this is this, guys. As you're saying, we mamela. Like, for me, that's the first time I've heard it, but I've heard it so much in at home. And you're right. That just means I need to take time to my... That's a form of meditation.
It is.
Yeah. And I never made that connection, even as a meditation teacher. So that's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I write about it a lot. Uz mamela, you know, as a literal practice, because I do feel like some practices... are so removed, but language is, you know, provides an intimacy to some moments that sometimes people would like to partake, but because they don't have the same language, then, you know, or sometimes I'd like to people, go for a walk. That's meditation. I mean, I've actually even done art performances or works just from walking, you know, and it's just also so incredible the things that I encounter while walking. I mean, somebody once gave me money walking. It's like, wow, hey, here you go. And I'm like, wow, okay, what is this walking thing? What's happening?
Oh,
what's happening? You
know? Where were you walking? Where was that? Asking for a friend.
No, it's also just for me, the ideas that I use, like faith as currency or whatnot, because there's so much, like you're right, there's so much we need to pour back into ourselves and to reclaim. And, you know, when we're talking about spaces, you know, the nest as a space, or Dear Magic as a participatory space that happens or that is held, I mean, I think for myself that we don't always have to have a physical space.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to, you know, to also just try embody it as well, firstly, because that's why I asked in our conversations, like, where do we start? And I think this is first the self, you know, ideas of self-creation, of self-acceptance. And I read something of yours that was saying, I am home, you know, and I believe in the home as a learning center, you know, as an education, as an university, as, because most of the things that we carry around are from home, you know, there's just a need to go through the layers, you know. So for me, that's a sense, okay, where do we start? The spaces, are they inside us? Are they outside of us?
It's so interesting because that is something that I feel like, especially for people of color in this country, the, and I even posted it about it yesterday, is about the politics of space, right? And how we define space. Is space a brick and mortar with four walls? Is space something within you? Is space something that you hold for someone? Like, what? I'd be interested on you guys' take. And obviously, this is, there's no right or wrong answer, but how do you define space in this context?
Yeah, I think what I found really useful, and you know, we've been talking about language and the power of language. Another tool that I find useful to make concepts universal is using the elements, nature, and the natural elements to define ideas. So space is one of those elements which is unique to all of the others because it's something that is actually no thing.
Ether.
In a sense, exactly. It's ether. It's the vacuum. It's the void. And for me, especially this year, and I think, B, we've gone through that as well, there's been an exploration of what exists when everything is stripped away. What is there within the vacuum? What is there for me within the void? And the void for me is the seed of creativity. It's the beginning of absolutely everything. And so when I think about taking up space or having ownership of a space, I think you first have to start off with the seed, which is becoming comfortable with there being nothing. And as Africans, I think that means stripping away all of the things that we've been told that we are, that we function this way, that we can only achieve this much, that we can only be this. Stripping away all of those identities, some, most of which don't come from us, some of which may come from our own cultures. And then delving into that darkness where there is nothing. And this goes back to what you were saying, Dudu, where actually the only thing that is there is the observer, is the thing that is looking at the nothing, the thing that is aware of the nothing. And I think that that's, I mean, this is really going esoteric with this question.
I was like, you took it there, girl. You took it there.
But I think for me, that's really what this whole year has been about, you know, on a personal level, moving away from Joburg, moving away, you know, I ended a long relationship. Me and Vanessa have now transitioned outside of our physical space. So it's really been a year of shedding, of letting go, and being within that inky black space where really there's nothing there except you. And then I think, from that seed, then you can start to say, well, okay, from this space, what do I want to put in? I want to put in comfort. I want to put in solitude. I want to put in meaningful conversations. I want to put in a way of relating with others that is convenient, but still challenges me when it's not to be there. And then you start to create spaces that I think are authentic and that are true to you rather than being defined by everything that you've been said to be, but maybe you aren't.
Wow, space. I mean, I remember even now that I once presented with a group of friends of mine. We presented on Black Women as Space. You know, but now I realize, coming from it from that artistic perspective, we were talking about, you know, those that have come before us. Because I think for us, there was a platform or a space, or the female body or the black body as, you know, something that for me, I had to even translate further to say, this is my idea of land. You know, if I never feel that I have ownership of it or have attained it or the politics around it, then what I can be sure of at this present moment is my embodiment, the space, you know. And it allowed me, I guess, to live in many dimensions because living in this one can be very limiting, I think, at times, because of the spectrum of frequencies or energies we are exposed to. So I had to create, you know, lefatsi lele, you know, another kind of world where, and for me, then the beads were the language in that world, you know. I could go into a language or a space that accepted me and I didn't have to say anything, which is also another important aspect. The vacuum is not so much a vacuum, I feel. I feel like it's an energy of sorts. It's what do you want to presence, you know, like a presencing of sorts, you know. What do you want to put inside the space? I mean, we see an empty room, we think it's an empty room, but it's not. You know, it's there's so many tapestries of the silence even in that room. So I think for me, silence became a language around that body, the body that was now space, that was now land. Because I had to think of myself when I'm beating that, okay, I'm using this language, but what does it say about the elements, like you're saying? You know, what does it say about my origins, which may not even, like Banisa said, may not stem from a cultural or, you know, a genealogical view of life. It might be some kind of makeup, you know, your cultural makeup is different from where you've walked.
Yes.
So, yeah, I had to just, yeah, there's a vacuum. Yeah, there is. But it's not the vacuum.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, like, the unlearning comes from. The things that we thought were are not the things that are. I don't know if,
yeah. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
I think from, mine is more like, and all of the, what you're saying resonates, and that's why, because space is so expansive, right? Like, there's no wrong or right answer.
Yeah,
so it's more of a personal connection. And I think mine is more fraught in the sense that it's very tied with ego for me, with space. There's a very my, it's my space. And that's, I think, been a life journey of fighting for. I need my space, because in my head, my space, I can, I finally have freedom. So whether that comes in the form of interpersonal relationships, where I often find myself, whether it's my attachment style or being an Aquarius, I often need space. I'm often asking people, please give me space, because I feel like it's a bit of a, you're infringing on my liberty by not giving me this space. And then there's a space of physically, it was so exciting to have a space like the nest space, because it was mine. Ours. We could say, we can point to it and be like, we own this, which is the problem with this country, right? And this continent, because we speak about the politics and it's like, what can I have to own? But space is, doesn't belong to anybody, like the land though. It doesn't belong to anybody, but the land belongs to someone. And I feel like also space has been colonized and what's the word, appropriated, and it's not spoken enough. All we can feel it and sense it. Our space isn't ours, and that's the fight. And I think it's important to have these conversations where space is a tangible thing. That empty room is empty.
It's very tangible. You're right. Yeah. It is. And for me, like, I'd like to just add more on the politics of it, you know, because we came into a gathering where throwing words in this day and age, like feminism, womanism, you know, there is an othering in the air that has been created. And I feel that we are now probably more well-versed with creating barriers of connection, you know, barriers to connection, sometimes quite unnecessarily. I do think, though, you're right, the sense of my is not something we've ever been able to say as, you know, Black women, as Black people.
Yes.
And it has some, you know, Anesu spoke about, you know, the the economics of it. You know, it has some economics attachment to it. It's systematic. Sometimes we may say, no, don't worry. It's not you. It's capitalism. Don't worry. The way you feel, the way you're depressed or, you know, like, so who can afford the care? Who can afford the breath? Who can afford the space? You know, who can afford the safety? You know, because space is quite linked to safety. Because where there's no safety, actually, there can be that dissolution of a space.
Absolutely.
Then we can really have true nothingness where everyone's just apathetic on some, you know what, we can't do it.
You know, it's so interesting when we speak about the politics of this and Nubanesa talking about the Mai, because I find often there's a narrative which says that as Africans or as indigenous people across the world, there was no sense of ownership. But that's incorrect. The ownership was not one of separation. It wasn't there's me and there's my house. And so I'm separate to my house and I own it. Our form of ownership was a belonging in relation to. So we didn't own the land because we were the land and the land was a part of us. You know what I mean? There was no separation between the owner and what is being owned. I often find, like what you're saying, B, people will say that this concept of ownership is anti-African or is anti-Indigenous, but it's actually just a different lens of what ownership and custodianship actually is when it comes to our cultures.
Yeah, because I mean, part of that custodianship or that ownership is a care concept to it. Like, you have to take care of the land, and sometimes for you to take care of it, you have to speak to it, you have to sit with it, you have to be around it. And I don't think in those economies of care, like in the commercial sense, people think of my intergenerational responsibility is care. My intergenerational responsibility is consideration. My intergenerational consideration, whether it's an in building of an intimacy or not, is born out of duty as well. Because if the three of us gave up, then the next generation, where would they take their steps from? You know what I mean?
Duty. I think that that's a really powerful one. The duty of us as Black women to create a legacy where our daughters, you know, we are the next ancestors. Right?
Wow, we're already sitting on those chairs.
Yeah. So, you know, there's everything that we create and say, and I love what you said about this intergenerational duty of care is so powerful, because it also then, when you, and Vanessa touched on this with that the tension between inconvenience and community, there definitely comes a time where you are exhausted of taking care of what you've built. Absolutely. And you're exhausted of being the custodian of what it is that you've built. And I find that there's a digging deep that's required that goes beyond your desires and even beyond your own capacity that's required. And I think what you're saying, and that's maybe where you can enter into these practices of channeling ancestors or channeling those who have gone before you, where you connect to that sense of duty of, oh, actually, this is not about me and my capacities and what I what I'm holding on my shoulders. This is intergenerational. There are generations of people who are building and have been building this with me through their own lives. And being able to tap into that, I think, is really, really powerful as a spiritual practice to keep yourself going at times where you don't have the fuel within yourself.
You triggered something in my mind when you spoke of that intergenerational care and the exhaustion, because we're really speaking to a whole other, and this is, bear with my mind, spider mind, but we speak of this intergenerational care and the amount of effort we need to pour into it. And we now, it makes sense, the honoring of goddesses and the honoring and the all the benefits, quote unquote, that being a healer or a sage came with, and the perks. And noticing how when it falls within the masculine, it's usually when you see it from the outside. You see, oh, let's say it's gifting and you never seem to pay for things. People just give you money when you're taking a walk on the street, you know, people offer you. And you see that from the outside and you're like, wow, wow, wow. Yeah. And but people lose, and a lot of the modern day gurus and healers, whether male or female, tend to forget that pouring of the intergenerational care. And the reason that you're giving that person 100 rand for walking is because this person has invested millions in the care of society. So, but now what we're dealing with is people who just want that 300 rand walking. Like, how do I get that?
You don't. And that's the thing. I mean, it's more, I think you guys would also be more well-versed in this, that it's an energetic thing. Because when you come in on that floor and you're in that pose, you can, take it lightly that you can fall.
Yeah, yeah.
You can fall. Things can happen. But because you're holding also steady, I mean, it's now literally, I think, coming to a point where we have to vision together, where we have to dream together. And I guess these are the spaces. And for me, these stories that we're telling, the narrative is our way also of dreaming and making sure. But I also think we still haven't given back as much as we can to the kids.
To the kids.
And we might find ourselves now complaining about, you know, the current generation, but we haven't left anything behind. You know, the eldership is leaving. That library is going. And we are now building a new library that's more out of each other's experiences and stories and memories and lessons from life. And if we're not cascading it down to the kids, then what we're building is gonna...
But that's the issue, and that I thought you were going in a different direction of the kids, but you came right around to something that made sense for me, because you can't give what you don't have. And that's a thing that I think is lacking, and the inconvenience and the exhaustion of this care comes from the lack of reciprocation or honoring of that care. So you find yourself in situations where that you're not, your landlord is hiking up prices, you're dealing with capitalism, you're trying to figure out how you're going to pay rent as a healer, because it's, we're in a system that doesn't see us. So we're trying to live double lives, right? I'm going to be a doctor, and then on the side, I'm going to side hustle.
I'm a yogi.
I'm going to do a yogi thing. And you're like, that's a lot. And that's why the burnout was real. And it's all, the burnout in these spaces is so, so high. And then people think it's ironic. Aren't you supposed to be a healer? Why are you depressed? Why is your life?
Because
like
you're
that?
Shouldering on your own. You're so right. You're not, because that's why I had to bring in Buhle from Tribal Monkey, because I experienced a very huge room with hundreds and hundreds of people, and I was running around like doing it on my own, and I was like, no, there's no way. There's just no way. I'm trying to thread here. I'm trying to teach. I'm trying to. Let's go into like, no.
Sounds
it's not
so familiar.
Yeah, it was, yeah, I was holding this, and then I was like, no. And then I, you know what, you're right. You know, when you said in the beginning, I thought it was powerful when you were like, I didn't want to do this alone, you know. And I thought, oh my God, that is like always at the back of my mind. But because there's a strong woman, this strong black woman who has to always appear. And I do like that bucket, because we live in that bucket and it saves us so many times. But when you said, I didn't want to do this by myself, and I was like, okay, then I invited somebody in the space. And we also realized that doing it monthly, every month, and sometimes there's no show up of community or whatnot. And as much as I would want to do it with a one-on-one, it was great. But like
feasible.
You're saying, the burnout that you're shouldering, the preparation energetically and otherwise, after winter, I took a hiatus because I was like, there's no way. There's no way.
So, but now my question is, how was this done before? Because we had healers within a community, and maybe this is what you were really same bees. We had healers where that was all that they did.
Yes.
They held, they were the storytellers, they were the custodians of knowledge, they were the medicine people of their communities, they would forage for the herbs and the medicines, they would have time and solitude where they would go and they would channel with spirit, and that is what they did. And I think what's missing, we've seen that, we know that narrative. The question was, how were they supporting that life? Like, who is feeding them?
The community.
The community. I don't think they had the same burden as us. I think they were literally, there was venerance there, there was reverence there. And remember, this person is now connected to mythology, connected to tradition, connected to, you know, many other realms that are not seen. And people are going to them because they think, oh, we appreciate your double sight. We appreciate your triple sight. Live well, prosper. And whatnot. But I mean, this day and age, because we want to commercialize, monetize, it's very difficult, you know. I mean, there's the Dharma principle to live on, but like you're saying, rent is due.
Exactly.
Kaza, you know.
Yeah.
And you deserve a holiday, you know, you deserve whatever that you feel would feed you as well or reward you. For your practice.
I feel like that was a hypothetical question because she knew the answer. You teach this. You speak of the yogis and how they when you give your life off as a monk, actually, let's go even deeper, where you give your life up because not because they're not living on the street struggling. No. It's because then the community takes on the responsibility as part of their ritual, as part of their sense of ceremony and healing and honoring to make sure that you exist and are fed. Now, we're not saying buy us a Rolex like the new gurus and get us the, we know, get us onto MTV or anything. No, no. We're just saying, can I eat? Can I sleep? Can I bathe myself?
Can I practice?
You know what I mean? Like that. And those are such basic things. But the system we live in, we are seen as when your kid at 9 years old says, I want to be a healer or a yogi. I mean, what are we going to say? Okay, sure. But let's just finish school. You can do both, Nana. You can do both.
I'm more likely to say as a parent, you know, that is already within you.
Exactly.
Why don't you try and find?
Exactly. I'm like, I understand, babe. You have the calling, but
that's already in you.
Let's just make sure we get the A's, because we live in a system where we know that that can lead to almost psychosis. You can end up in a mental institution. You can end up in prison. Many of our tribe are in those spaces because they refused to do what we did or didn't have the tools, which is to mask, which is a term I'm borrowing from the neurodiversion and sort of atmosphere where we have to pretend to be normal.
It's so interesting. What really spoke to me in what you said, B, was that taking care of the healer is actually a spiritual practice for the community.
Absolutely.
I think that's so powerful because as a healer, you are used to seva. Your whole life is seva. You are serving. And seva is not just for the healer. It's for anyone on the spiritual path. So if you are receiving a practice, if you are receiving the yoga, if you are receiving the breath work, if you're receiving the meditation, if you're receiving the beautiful beating workshop, what is your seva?
Absolutely.
What is your what is your practice of devotion?
Absolutely.
And maybe that's where we've lost it, where people confuse the monetary investment that often the healer will actually define. So technically, I think that that also almost dilutes the exchange. Because as a healer, you're defining what the person's seva or the person's reciprocal exchange should be for you. But it's not, it becomes less of them offering that to you as a practice of seva themselves and more like, oh, this is my obligation in order to participate. And I think it's really interesting to think about that that ritual of service being reciprocal between the community and the person who's holding the community.
I think somebody mentioned it around connection, right? Relations, right? Because if you are mostly aware of the connection or the depth or where it sits, right, you would be then able to honor it. Some people do give back to the healer because they understand and they've connected. They've connected with the message and they've also connected with even the presence. You know, they've connected to what it is that is legitimized for them in that moment. So I think because, like I'm saying, like I was saying earlier, we are now in this era of many, many, many barriers to connection. And then they would be the barrier to devotion as well. And a barrier that now would even other the healer. Or would even say the healer is in fashion or is, you know, is performative, you know. And where, what do we say then to those people who see our existence not even knowing that you've suffered from anxiety or you've even suffered a double mind from doing what you're doing. Sometimes we're like, all right, let's leave this thing. All right, let's leave it. Let's go 9 to 5. What? 9 to literally. 8? Whatever, you know, and just be. I mean, you're a doctor. You don't need to suffer.
Yeah.
You don't need to suffer like this.
You know? Speaking of layers, because exactly that, it's like I find the issue is, it's we're coming from, we've been stripped of so much, right? That we're still at the point where we need to teach people to even notice what that reverence feels like. So, you know, we're far. Other people in the East who have been practicing for a long time, in embedded in their culture is that reverence, and they give offerings, and that's why a monk in Tibet can live a full life in that way. And I guess in our version would be maybe the Christianity or the religions.
Church,
but it's like we have to first teach, this is what space feels like. This is what connection feels like. This is awareness. This is healing. And only then, and then to value that. And then only after valuing that will that come in the sense it's like, oh, so this, is this coming in my lifetime or not? Like, what's what? How are we gonna, are we gonna see the outputs of that? And I think it's layered in that sense because also as a healer, then you've got that knowledge ingrained in you that you cannot be doing it for monetary stuff. You cannot be doing it for the reciprocation. You just need to be doing. And I think it's such a difficult space to lie in. Huh? Where you're supposed to just be giving, like, you've got to give the shirt off your back, you know.
Give,
our idols are Buddha and Jesus and all of that. And you're trying as a human to be that. But you're like, did Jesus need to pay rent?
No.
You know?
No, he was welcomed into whoever's home, you know.
Sometimes, I mean, the history is fraught, right?
I mean, you know, we do need to do our research. But I'm sure Jesus was kept.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure he was kept. I mean, by the even the fact that he had these 12 people around him. So nice, because this is what then it is now, right? We're in this community. Now we have to think of collective thinking, collective dreaming, collective living. And within our very own experienced living practices, how do we then continue connecting together, collectively being supported? I mean, they always say that you are never praised or loved at home. You know, it's always out there in the world or where people don't know. For me, it is Cape Town. Hi, Cape Town.
Yeah, interesting.
I promise you, because there are some places as a South African that you go into, you know, as a place, as a space, that you feel like, wow, I couldn't be any other character there. Then, you know, but I guess it's also that whole envisioning or dreaming or the imagination as a tool. Perhaps I can find more, meditative people around that makes it feel like, wow, this is where I'm supposed to be, you know, because Joburg can be a bit dense, be so dense in managing. And I think it even just makes us more isolative, you know, it makes us more, you know what, I'm just going to stay with my silence.
No, it would be easy for us to go move to Worcester and serve at Vipassana and be fed. Because that's the only kind of system I've seen that looks like that, that's close to me, where I can go, sleep, meditate, I'm being fed by people honoring the work that I'm doing. But when I look around in Worcester at the animals and the mountains, that's such a peaceful place. This is not where my work is needed. It is here where it is dense and it is sticky and it is hard. that my work is needed the most, but it's such a counterintuitive thing because you guys don't want me. The other place celebrates, and it hurts, right? But you don't want me because you don't know any better.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's, you know, Dudu, you've been speaking about collective dreaming, which I think is really beautiful. And, you know, the questioning of whether there is a universal dream. Is there a dream that all of us are yearning for? You were talking about this almost like the silo of living, right? And that this, and I do think it is systemic that it's been set up this way. But I wonder if we did, you know, go, you know, we gathered thousands of people together. We had days and on end to meditate. We were all being fed. It was wonderful. If at the end of that, we were to all ask ourselves what we wanted to create, whether we'd find that we all had the same vision and the same dream for it. And I think collectively, that's true. Most of us are wanting peace,
freedom,
and comfort, and community, and freedom, and safety, growth. And so I think the question is, maybe what daily rituals, self-rituals are we doing that are perpetuating a system and a life that is not syncing up with our dreams? Because we can say we're dreaming. This is, you know, we can have a dream, but then how are you creating your dream? What it is, what are you doing to bring that dream into reality? And I think both on a collective level and on an individual level, you'll find that our daily rituals are not actually leading us in that direction. They're leading us in the direction of separatism and being apart from one another.
Yeah, I think you're right, because when I am doing the daily walking or the daily breathing or beating or meditating, it's more or less, unless I involve my kids, it is more or less an individual, you know, but it's, I think I do it more to keep myself fortified as an individual. They are more for careful of keeping the frequency, the vibration, the fortification, but also probably maybe to some people they may wear off because you are, I think, energized by other people. I think souls energize other souls, 100%. You know. And for me, it is a whole story now on Ubuntu, you know, the we. We know the I. If you can dot the I, you are fine. But it's the we, because the we at the moment wants, you know, transformations. And the we now, probably where we are, needs some kind of militancy, some kind of visioning, you know. And you're right, maybe we've had probably collective dreams of just walking safely in the street. Yeah. Or just, for me, I imagine a big, tall, endless building of black practitioners of across all. Imagine a building of people who look like ourselves, but this one is a doctor, this one is a nurse, this one is a thing, this one, you know, and we're all in one place and you can literally like heaven move up and down and find a person that looks like you, that speaks like you, that, you know, you don't go out of this building to get whatever service. Whatever service you need is within that building. So those same people, they become your community. They feed you as the healer. They feed your creativity, your body, your dreams. And the trips can be, let's go and shuttle down to Durban or whatever, you know, just a collectivity that I think we had when we were young. And I think it's missing now because we all have to be Instagrammable, commercial, viable, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. You know. I think I'm not sure if I'm, I don't think that people have gotten the I dotted. I think that's the issue. And when I, because for me, when responding to your question to the groupness about how we kind of get into those rituals and daily rituals, I think for me, we spoke about this yesterday in regards to your personal life, right? You can only meet someone to the depths you've met yourself.
Yes.
So we jump to community, and I think that, but unless you can embody what your dream is. And that's your only responsibility, I think, in life. Embody your dream, because that's the only way I'm going to be able to pick up what your dream is, and see if I connect with it or not. But if you're busy on a collective dream, we're not even sure, because so many things we say, oh, we want freedom. What does that mean? We want safety. What does that mean to you? We want, you know, so it's all individual. And I think for me, it would be all of us embodying our authenticity and our dreams in order to attract the people who connect to it, and we can become stronger. And then I've done the work. We speak about that so much. Yeah, do the work, because there's no point in you coming to me. We can do the work together, but it's significantly more difficult than if you have done the internal work and I've done the internal work, and then we come together to do more work. But if you haven't done the internal work and want to come do work with me, we're at an imbalance, and I feel like the world is heavily imbalanced in that sense.
I think in that sense, can we say to people, you have the right to dream?
Hey.
You have the right to find your lane, your pocket.
Well, your not just the right to dream, but the right to embody your dream.
Yes.
Yes.
You have the vision, start living your vision. Start acting it out.
Don't be scared.
It's hard.
It's hard. Can we talk? No, I think we shouldn't also talk about, it's energy. What? Maybe we can even take the responsible moment now and tell them it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
It's tough.
But you know, Dudu, you spoke about your dream being a collective dream of everyone being able to walk around freely. That is a big dream, right? Society, we know about the politics, but how it starts is with you choosing to walk every day. That's not as challenging. That's not true. As big. And I think that's what I mean about embodying your dream. You imagine a world where everyone's walking, but you're not even taking a step out of your house. Like, what's supposed to happen?
Yeah.
You know?
And that's where the burnout, I think, with the Nest as well, we get so caught up in the collective dream of a wellness space where people of color can be. But it's like, are we embodying that in ourselves that we tend to win? And that's when things go array, is when we're doing this collective dream, but we're not embodying it. And that's why it was so important when Inessa said, I need to go. I need to take time. There cannot be any friction, because if you don't do that, we're definitely screwed. You know, I need you to be okay in order for us to make this dream happen. So make sure you're making your dreams come true. I make my dreams come true, because that's the only way we can make the community's dreams come true.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are also pointing towards some philosophical avenues of self-qualification, self-determination, that arise, and wholeness that literally, or restoration even, or works of repair, I guess, because people don't have to wait for anybody. Mind you, this is why now even these communities are so strengthening, because they encourage somebody to be an agent, you know, a free agent, or to encounter some agency, or to encounter presence. You know, what you're talking about is presence, you know. How are you going to live your dream as hard as it is? Or maybe not say hard, let's say replace hard with
challenging,
deep, as deep as it's going to be, because it's going to take you from shallow water to, you know, all the way to the big water and back again. It's a repetitive cycle, so don't give up. But, you know, and in moments where you're like saying, if Anesu needs to leave, then leave. Like in a moment where, you know, where I do my workshops or meditations around soul consciousness, we always talk about you have the right to appear and you have the right to disappear.
I love goosebumps from that.
So powerful. Yes, you do have the right to appear. I mean, even as, I mean, the theater people will also add in performance, you can also exit the stage, enter the stage, then the performance is that powerful, because what is that but not anchoring or holding your own anchor and looking for your own ground or your own portion of sea or land, or, you know, that you can breathe from? Because I've experienced it myself, trying to, over the years, you know, do, I mean, that's why I moved more towards wellness and spirituality, because the fashion frontier for me was very instant coffee, coke, like, very, you know.
Shallow.
And it was insatiable because you don't know what the consumer wants. What does the consumer want?
Yes.
What are they happy with?
Yes.
You know, in because there's also just this flooding of information all the time.
Can I add on that? Mm. I recently went on, I was traveling in Europe for a summit regarding the work that I do. And we were put through a social media training, the one that I showed you yesterday, Ness. And for me, it was this idea of this, the whole narrative for me was, this is what people want to hear. This is what people will get you higher likes. This is what will make you stay engaged. I'm like, what do you want? Yeah. Why must I don't care what they want. I must do what I want. And it's either they, excuse my language, fucks with it or not. This idea of building a life that revolves around the demands of other people, I was like, this is crazy. I'd rather have 5 followers who love what I do and I do it so naturally because I will give them authenticity than me building this whole empire based on the likes of people that I don't even know.
100%. I mean, that's not creativity, right? Creativity is channeling the muse, channeling the energy that comes from within you and putting it out into the world, regardless of the outcome, really.
And we're just going to be doing the same thing. We're just going to be doing the same thing. When you go on Instagram, you're going to see the same content. Where is the uniqueness? Let me be me. Tell me how I can be me and how better to reach the people who are into that. That's all I need from you. That's the workshop that I'm looking for.
I think we're also all, I mean, I don't know if we're moving closer towards the, you know, ultimate of our discussion, but just to add that, you know, sometimes, how are we then, going forward, right? Because we spoke about a dream is not a dream until it is shared by the entire community, right?
Mm.
But there's an importance of the self and building practice. How are we going to then make sure our practices are integrated in people's lives? Or is it a momentary thing that we engage with them and then it's their responsibility? How do we grow our community, the existing one? The people that have come forward and come to you and understood you or seen you.
You know, what I've started to really appreciate, and Vanessa, you touched on this, is the only way that you can actually hold other people accountable is by living what it is you're trying to teach other people.
Yeah.
So for me, like B said, taking a step out of Joburg, I knew I had to do that this year. And it didn't make any logical sense whatsoever. Like logically, there was no reason for me to do it. I didn't even really know why. My mind was not the driver. But my intuition, without a doubt, was like, this is what you have to do. And I would hope that, you know, maybe it hasn't happened throughout this year, but maybe it'll be through whatever comes from making that decision, that will then show other people that if you get a pull to do something or your intuition tells you to do something, do it. Because you might not know what it's going to result in, but it's taking you somewhere for a reason. And I think you can have many lectures and many workshops around following your intuition, living in a way that's authentic to you, and you can teach that in an hour and a half. But if you as a healer are not actually living that way, your people will pick up on that. They will see that. And they will also follow their intuition for 90 minutes and then go off and do something else, you know? So I think it's funny because I'm finding that our conversation is constantly going around in the circle of the self, the community, and we. It's that constant dynamic of flow between, okay, I need to focus on myself, and then through focusing on myself, I help you to do the same. It's that constant interplay, I think.
I feel like, you know, we made reference to Jesus and Buddha and these incredible spiritual prophets, healers, gods. And I mean, I think it goes without saying that by no means are we saying that as healers we are that or we should be treated like that. But it is a great form of example, because I think in order to directly answer your question of how to grow the community and how to guide them in this way, is I think it's really important for my community to know that this is a co-creation. Mm. I am not the martyr. Mm. Don't make me God because you couldn't do the same, right? The Lebo Mashile's words, where it's this idea. Jesus said, do A, B, C, and D, da, 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 da. And people are like, oh, yes, we could never be that. So it's you. It's just you. We'll just watch in awe as you live this beautiful life, but I'll sin. And I think it's also with us. I'm like, leave me alone. It's a co-creation. You also need to show me something. And we need to feed each other. It's an ecosystem. But I find, again, coming back to capitalism, it's about getting as much as you can for as little as you can, right? Mm-hmm. So when someone says this is a moon gathering and it's open in donation, you go, oh, forget the yoga ship membership. I'll just come for this, and then it's free, and then I'll use this money for something else, and I'm maximizing, and I'm a smart person. Mm. And it's like, no. Let's walk a bit back, because then this is not going to be sustainable.
I won't be able to keep doing this.
So the idea is not to put the pressure of every time you come, you must pay, but an idea. And we even also say monetary isn't a thing. It's about energy exchange. You want this continuing, you need to give. If you don't give, then you're not going to get. And that's something community needs to understand. It is not a one-way street.
I think it's literally, you know, a person is a person because of another person.
Yes.
And it's such a journey of even while you're remembering, you're connecting with other things, other people, other, you know, there's so many variables, like we've said, politics and the likes. I mean, people need to just be aware of how interconnected we are and what you do really. I mean, there was a time I literally had a dream about something like the nest, but the fact that it is like something that exists, or even I am doing something that I've always wanted to go to a beading workshop forever and be like, I'll go until I learn or whatnot. Having sat through and did it and then creating those, and people take it so seriously when they do, you know, some people, like, you'll get your own goosebumps and your own confirmations on some, you know what? There may not be some monetary thing to this, but what I got today was, you know, an amazing awareness of the work that you're also carrying. So I think it's one person feeds the other, one element feeds the other, the space, the safety, the movement, or, you know, the dotted I and the we and the, you know, the capital we needs a dotted I.
It's funny because conversations like this are the same thing, right? Mm. Where just by hearing you share what you shared and by us expressing what we've expressed, it's you leave gatherings or conversations like this feeling full, feeling like you're inspired. It's nourishing, you know, it's nourishing. Mm. And I think it's so important to come and have open conversations about things that may be taboo. Like Vanessa says, you know, as a healer, it's actually taboo to be like, well, what am I actually getting from you by healing you? That's a taboo topic. Like, you know what I mean?
It feels
so hard.
It's icky to talk about, right? But actually, I feel like this conversation has been so powerful because unless as a healer you express your needs and you express your discomfort, it's also unfair to expect people to fulfill those needs without you having expressed that.
Yeah, but also, can people have some sense of decorum? Don't approach people you know heal in one way or another and want them to do it on the spot. Dance for me. Yes. Dance for me now. No. Please, go through the proper channeling. Mm. Respect people. Mm. Don't expect them to dance for you on the spot. Gotcha. It's not, you know? I mean, like the structure of I am home. How do you act in a home? What are the values you carry in a home? What actions are permissible and what are non-negotiables? You know? Yes, I always also have free ones, but I realize when I have free workshops, people don't come.
What is that? I know we're rounding up this conversation.
How does that work? When it's free, they don't come.
Because they don't see value in it. They don't trust it. It's like someone, I've seen a TikTok, if they stand on the corner offering free water, yeah, people are suspicious. We live in a system where, why are you giving me free water? What are you getting out of this? Are you trying to poison me? The idea of just being able to give is not ingrained in the systems in which we operate in. So a free workshop is like, either it's not worth what it is, or why would you be giving it for
There's
free?
No material.
Or you're taking something and I'm just not aware of it. And so I don't want to engage.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But we have the opposite case, though. We have the case where our free workshops are full to the brim, but should we put a price on it, it's suddenly people
ground.
Are like, whoa, I don't know if I can pay for it. And it's like, but you're going to buy a coffee just after this. You're going to walk down the studio and go get a coffee and have brunch with your friends. And it's that value of like, what can I, this system of, and I'm part of it as well. How can I get as much as I can for as little as possible? This self-preservation in this bad, bad, mean, mean world. Mm-hmm. And the freedom of just trusting the universe and being like, take, and I'll give. Mm-hmm. Or take, I was saying taking to the community, they must take, and I will receive. And luckily, I personally, I don't know if it's a privilege, but have experienced giving, people taking, and receiving in ways that... I could never, it's a testimony. I'm a testimony of that.
Yeah. Wow. What a conversation of connection. I think we all experience moments of healing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Healing, connection, you know. Mm. I mean, I would have liked to ideate also around what feminism looks like.
Yes, I thought about that.
In you know, maybe we can do a 30-second kind of a minute to say, how do we see it? Because for me, I'll start by saying I don't even use those words.
That's what I mean.
Because mama kana kena society, nana lebo mewa ku kereking. You know, I've always seen women with women, you know. Maybe it's also because I have three other sisters, but it's always been a woman's world for me. You know, so I don't know if we need boxes or we need, you know, instructions for people to understand how important the woman is generally in society, you know.
I love that train of thought because exactly that. It's like, oh, wait, let's talk about feminism, but our whole discussion and existence in this conversation is a form of feminism, black feminism, African feminism. And it's about less talk and more doing. Let's embody it. The fact that we're here and speaking our truth and saying is a form of feminism. And I find that often with concepts like this, it's usually when we speak of yoga and wellness spaces, they're usually full of women. And we're always like, it is with the rates of GBV and crime that are committed by men, you guys need to be in here. It's never the actual people who need to be engaging that are leading. It's always the people who need to support. So for me, it's like we already embody feminism. The people who need to talk about feminism is men or women who don't believe in feminism. For us, I'm a living existence of it.
It's an everyday thing.
I don't know where to draw the line and start. Feminism is getting my Uber and going to my job and talking my mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And just acknowledging we love women, we think women, we premise women, you know.
Yeah.
Women are God.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also, for me, the masculine is so pervasive. I mean, you know, we all, according to spirituality, the masculine and the feminine is in all of us, right? But we're at a stage, I think we're in an imbalance of the masculine.
Yeah.
And what the masculine loves to do is to define, to have a definition, to say, oh, to be a feminist, you have to do A, B, C. Bullet points, tick it off, and then you're a feminist. That, to me, is actually anti-feminism.
I love that.
The feminism or the feminine is all about experiencing, it's
feeling.
Experiential, it's listening, it's sighing or saying when you hear something, right? It's being angry in a conversation and being soft in a conversation. It's not about this mind.
Yeah.
I think the mind is very masculine. Feminine is the heart, it's the womb.
I just had a vision of the ocean as you're speaking.
Yes. The masculine is the mountain.
How do you define the ocean? Mm. Yes, we can talk about all of the degree of different minerals and salts and all of the species that live, but like that's not the ocean.
Yeah.
You have to go and put your feet in and smell it. And I think that's really what living in a feminist way is having to do away with this inherently masculine world that we live in that constantly wants to label and define. Mm. And that doesn't get you anywhere because then you remain stuck in the mind.
Mm.
Yeah, and you're limited. You limit your experience to that.
Yeah. Truth is, balance is key spiritually and physically.
Mm.
We need men, we need women, and we need men. Yes, yes. Please, let's blow that sound.
We love you.
Like, please take it in and smile. Yeah. Please have a moment, yoga minute. Mm. You know, because I don't think it's said enough, or it's this othering. Our language, sharp. It's othering a lot these days, but we need them, they need us.
Mm-hmm.
And
if we are them, they are
they
us.
Are, like, mm-hmm. you know, one cannot come out from the other, and you know, all that science and all that jazz. But you know, it's around that awareness again, awareness of everything in the eye. You know, if you have a sister, a mother, a daughter, it's that awareness of holding their picture in their mind, in your mind each time, because every other woman is but an extension of that person that you first know in your home. And even the opposite is true. Every man you meet. So let's just all be kind.
Mm.
Let's all be kind. And let's also all carry envelopes of silences where we know when to use it, when, you know, absolutely. It can save us a lot. But yeah, I'm very grateful to Gute. Obviously, we all are for this opportunity. Yes. So this was so amazing to the African feminisms people. Let's do it again next year with the Nest. With Dear Magic. With a bigger round table.
Yes.
With all the bells and the whistles.
Love it.
Thank
and
you.
The beads.
And the beads.
Yes.